Welcome to a special edition of Colorado Matters from KCFR News. I'm Ryan Warner. We're going to talk about CSEP today, the Colorado Student Assessment Program. This month, in public schools across the state, students are spending hours on these tests, and the results are hugely important, determining everything from a school's funding to its reputation, even whether a school can keep its doors open. It's a crucial time for CSEP. The governor and a bipartisan group of lawmakers are pushing for big changes in what Colorado students should be expected to learn and how to test them on it. The State Department of Education is conducting its own review of standards. This hour, we'll be asking, is CSEP improving education? Do students miss out on a well-rounded education when a school is bent on getting high scores? And do the results in reading, writing, math, and science accurately reflect what's going on in a school? We're going to hear from a number of people coming up, including Colorado's Commissioner of Education, school administrators, teachers, a parent activist, and students. To start, KCFR's Christina Tabor visited Pomona High School in Arvada, where students attend a CSEP pep rally.
It's the week before the CSEP test, and kids at Pomona High School are getting revved up at the second annual CSEP Achievement Celebration. Principal Dan Cohan gives them reason to cheer.
Because of you and what you have done, this school stands at some of the highest achievement marks in our history. In our history at Pomona.
Things looked grim just a couple years ago when the school was on academic probation. Principal Cohan says teaching to the standards helped turn things around, and so did motivating kids to do better. He does that by singling out all the students who improved on the test last year. That's about 400 Pomona kids, or nearly half the 9th and 10th grades. They sit together in the gym wearing matching t-shirts the school gave them. All of the students are required to be here, though, so they can watch as the principal hands out prizes to the kids who improved.
We have a signed football from Super Bowl 32, signed by Rod Smith. That thing is worth a fortune. We've got tons of gift certificates. This is the real deal.
David Miller is a junior who scored advanced across the board on CSEP last year. He says the pep rally is a good thing for the whole school, not just for students who were celebrated.
It's motivation for the other people, like the freshmen coming in. I think it's great motivation for them to do good on CSEP because, you know, they get the cool shirt, they get to be recognized in front of everybody.
Junior Veronica Moffitt improved on the test last year, too. She gets that the results aren't just a reflection on her, but it's also about her school.
There's really great incentives for if you improve, obviously, because you want to help your school, and Pomona almost lost their accreditation, so they wanted to get accreditation back because that's huge.
That's exactly the point, according to Principal Cohan. At the pep rally, he tells the kids why the test matters.
We work as a school. We rise or we fall together as a school. Every single person in this room makes a huge difference on our school's performance. Now, you should be proud. You should be proud as a Pomona Panther because of what you have achieved academically. Are you proud? Stand up now. Stand up now.
Cohan says a lot goes into preparing these students for CSEP. He says most of the success came from changing the curriculum and teaching to the test, but he also thinks an hour of cheering and celebrating about their good scores last year is the push they need to perform well again. Christina Tabor, KCFR News.
You can see photos from the rally on our website, kcfr.org. There you can also learn more about today's panelists, read sample test questions, and brush up on CSEP. Now, let's go to KCFR's performance studio and hear from our guests. Thank you all for joining us. It's nice to have you with us. We are, in this first part of the program, going to look at how CSEP influences what happens in the classroom. And our question all along throughout the program is going to be, is CSEP improving education? Elaine Grace, you're a literacy teacher at Monarch High School in Boulder, a high-performing school, I think
Yes.
we can say safely. And Does the preparation that goes into CSAP for you and your students sound anything like the quasi-religious experience we heard in that piece?
No, not at all. I was talking to my 16-year-old daughter, who's also a junior at Monarch High School where I teach, today, and asked her if she felt many of her teachers taught to the test. And she felt that, in general, no. And as a teacher, that's not what I would like to see happen in a classroom. I don't think that's what teaching is all about, and that if all we are is concerned about test scores and raising achievement, then we've really devalued education in a lot of ways.
So do you feel that teaching to the test in your classroom takes time away from something else?
Oh, absolutely.
Like what?
Doing something that is involved with real learning and really being involved with kids about something that they care about, something that's going to have relevancy to them in their lives and their interests outside of school.
Kristen Waters, you are a principal at a school that's in a different situation. It's ranked as low performing. This is Bruce Randolph School in Denver Public Schools. And to what extent has your work to turn that school around been about teaching to the test or making sure kids are prepared for CSAP?
Well, I think it's taking a look at what the state standards are and making sure that our students can measure up to the state standards. And so it's I wouldn't say it's teaching to the test, but it's saying, here's what our students are supposed to know. Do they know that? And if not, what are we doing to help them meet those standards?
It sounds like you have a different perception of CSAP than what we heard from Elaine Grace. Is that you think that's time well spent in the classroom?
Definitely. Our students need to be able to read, to be able to write, to be able to compute, and our state assessment is a good test. And there certainly are some faults with it, but as far as measuring whether or not students are meeting the standards, I think it's important. And I come from my students come from an area of high poverty. And in the past, if students were not meeting standards, it was ignored. And so I think it's important that we recognize how students are performing and that we work to help them meet state standards.
Let's bring the Commissioner of Education for Colorado into the discussion. That's Dwight Jones. Commissioner, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We hear these two educators give us very different perceptions of what it means to prepare students for CSAP. Where do you fall on this as, well, the highest-ranking education official in Colorado?
I fall somewhere in the middle to say they're both right. I certainly agree with Dr. Waters that it really is about teaching to the standards, and if we're teaching to the standards, we ought to be teaching that. And in Mrs. Grace's analogy of, do we get too pinpointed on saying it just has to be those things? And I would say that happens in a lot of our classrooms across Colorado as well. I do think you can teach to the standards and do that in a variety of ways. I've been a former superintendent in a district that I think was able to figure that out very well, Fountain Fort Carson School District Number 8. Teachers were able to teach to the standards, but they were able to bring a lot of different units and challenge kids and inspire kids, even though we were staying pretty focused on the standards. So I think you can actually do both. There are some that are not doing that, and I think if that is a practice that's taking place, then we ought to look to improve that practice.
I want to bring in someone who's not in the studio with us, but who we caught up with earlier. Ellen Ravnan teaches music at Thunder Ridge Middle School in Cherry Creek School District, and she's a member of our Public Insight Network. It's how she came to us. She says the entire staff at her school is charged with preparing kids for CSAP. In her music class, that means she has to integrate the notion of writing into music, and she isn't entirely comfortable with that idea.
I have a little reluctance about it because I don't feel that I'm really qualified for it. I mean, I'm not a writing teacher. I just do it by the seat of my pants. And it's a little bit like if I asked my colleagues to teach music literacy in their classes, will you please drill them on reading notes and treble clef and bass clef? And oh, by the way, on the advanced learners, would you teach them tenor clef and alto clef? I mean, of course, they would, if I gave them a sheet of paper, they would do their best, but is that really authentic? Is it very good? No.
That's Ellen Ravnan at Thunder Ridge Middle School. Michael Bennett, superintendent of Denver Public Schools, is with us.
And great to be here.
Hi, Michael. Will you address this notion for me of what we just heard, the idea that there's such concern about CSAP and about the results of CSAP, that it infuses all areas of the curriculum, some that to this educator don't even make sense.
Well, I think we need to unpack a couple things here. One thing that's been said already and said well is that fundamentally this is about state standards, and we ought to be revisiting that question, making sure that there's general agreement that the standards are the right standards, that we don't maybe have too many standards. I think we might have too many myself.
Would you change the standards?
Well, let me just say, the CSAP is the instrument that's used in this state to assess how well we're doing on our path to meeting those standards as schools and as children in the schools. And again, there should be a legitimate debate about whether the quality of the test is high enough. Are we testing too many things, too few things? In my view, though, it is very important that we have external accountability of our public schools.
Well, you raised a lot of questions there. I want you to answer a few of them.
Okay.
I mean, one, if the test reflects the standards, that is what we want kids to be learning and by when, do you think the standards are right? You alluded to the fact that there might actually be too many.
I think it's possible that as a country and as a state, we're asking our teachers and our children to cover too much in a year's time in some places. I'm saying that's possible. And that if the purpose of the accountability is to make sure schools are going in the right direction or the wrong direction, we may be able to do that with some fewer standards. We may be able to do that with a little bit less testing. What I'm not saying is that we ought to move away from accountability. We just should refine it and make sure we're improving it.
John Covington is the superintendent of Pueblo City Schools, and it was celebrated in the last round of CSAPs for having closed the achievement gap at the elementary school level. There's still work to be done at the middle and high school level. And John, I saw you nodding when Superintendent Bennett was talking about the standards. Are we trying to teach too much to children in a year? What do you think of that?
Well, I think, first of all, when you make a comparative analysis of what our foreign competitors require children to learn over the course of the year compared to what those of us who are in American public schools require, I think it might be a bit much. Take Singapore, for example. If you look at the Singapore standards and or textbooks that teachers use in classrooms, you'll see that it's far less than what we're requiring of our students.
So what we've heard so far is that the test is absolutely a reflection of the standards, and some of you are questioning the standards themselves. I do want to go back to the instrument, to CSAP. Angela Engel, you are a parent. You are project director of the Children's Action Agenda, and we should say an outspoken critic of CSAP.
Yes.
Your daughter Grace is sitting out the test this year. Am I right about that?
Yes, she's in fourth grade, and this will be her second year sitting out CSAP.
Help explain that, and perhaps in the context of what we heard. I mean,
sure.
Is it because of CSAP? Is it because of what you think CSAP is asking them to do?
Well, Superintendent Bennett made the comment that the real issue here is standards, and I would argue that the real issue here is children. And if we go back to the question, is CSAP improving our schools or aren't they? The real purpose of education ought to be to help children solve problems and help children learn to solve the world's problems. And so for my daughter to be in an educational system that spends year after year after year preparing her for a test that upon graduation she's never going to see again, is that a valuable use of her time? And I would argue absolutely not. But the second thing regarding the opening and the Pomona principal.
This is the school we visited at the top of the show where they had this rally.
Yes. You know, he was talking about, you're here to help our school. And that's absolutely backwards. The purpose of our educational system is not to have children be the accountability monitors of teachers and school administrators. The purpose of our educational system ought to be to serve children. And so it just turns my stomach to hear a principal say that we need you. We need you to help raise our ratings, to help prove to the state that we're justified in our educational performance. It needs to be the opposite.
Let's turn to Mike Campbell. He is a principal of the high school in Fort Lupton. And Mike, thanks for being with us.
Sure.
Let me have you address what we just heard from Angela Engel. The sense I get from her is that she doesn't want all that pressure riding on her child, that the accountability of a school and its teachers and the district would be riding on what she does with that pencil and paper.
Well, we have to differentiate between the way the test is used by
some stakeholder groups compared to others. The way the results of the test are used in my school, the two schools that I have experience with, is to support student learning. Those same results are then also used in a different manner by other stakeholder groups.
And when you say stakeholder groups using the test in ways that might pressure kids, what do you mean by that?
That's why your panel is the size that it is, because there are very many groups that have some piece of this puzzle. What we've tried to do at Fort Lupton is to make sure that our focus is on elevating student learning, and that's why everything is driven by the standards. And I think that's a little bit of Elaine's concern about the focus has a tendency to put things to an aside. We had a group of 10th graders come after Christmas and say, we want to do something about the political caucuses that are coming up in Colorado. That was not something we could fit in to the plans, so a teachable moment was set aside. I don't like that, but the context that I'm operating is to stay focused on student learning in relationship to the standards.
Can we just put this question out to any of you? Has anything in your district been put aside because of CSAP? I mean, one thing we read about is recess gets shorter, that other types of classes, music classes, for example, get sidelined because schools are so concerned about CSAP. Is that happening in any of your schools or any of your districts?
This is Angela Engel. Last year in Grace's third grade, her afternoon recess was eliminated. And when I had the conversation with the principal as to why that was, he said there's just too many things to fit in during the day.
Commissioner Jones.
Sure. I would like to respond. I think there are certainly some schools, especially if they're on the verge of kids not performing well, that are making adjustments in schedule to say that kids being able to read, write, do math are important and necessary, and we have to, in some cases, give kids extra time. One of the things that I think as a state we've really not taken a look at is looking at the whole schedule and even how we organize our day. Certainly, there's competitions for time. That still happens whether kids are playing sports, or you'll hear in the scheduling kids that are doing band and what classes do they not be able to do because they make a decision to do band. Seems like some of the schools that are looking at what researchers said about lengthening the school day, giving kids more time to learn. A lot of schools do a lot of progress monitoring. They provide tutorials and do a lot of things just outside of the systematic schedule. So what's being described here, I think, is true in some cases. But what I'm excited about in the majority of schools across this state, I think there is a healthy balance.
Lori Shepherd is the dean of the CU Boulder College of Education. And Lori, weigh in here for us. You've studied, by the way, high-stakes testing quite extensively, and you bring that expertise to the circle.
I'm generally a supporter of CSAP because it has open-ended components that make it much less vulnerable to the most pernicious effects of teaching the test compared to other state tests that are all multiple choice. So generally favorable. But I would like to point out that there's quite a bit of research nationally on this issue of what gets pushed out of the curriculum. And to emphasize that it happens disproportionately in schools serving poor and minority children. So we have evidence that social studies and science get driven out of the curriculum, and that that doesn't happen in affluent schools so much. So I agree with the statements about teaching the standards that have been made, but if we're going to try to improve the effects of CSAP or its follow-on to CSAP in the future, we have to acknowledge that these things happen. They happen when novice teachers who come over and over again because there's a revolving door in many urban schools do not necessarily know how to teach to standards in the fulsome way that's been described, and instead narrowly imitate the test. And when kids get worksheets day after day all year long that look a lot like the format of the test, then what the research shows is that their learning makes the test scores go up, but there's no generalized understanding. So you could ask them the same thing in a slightly different way, and they wouldn't be able to answer.
Let's wrap this segment up with where we began it. Elaine Grace, again, a literacy teacher at Monarch High School in the Boulder Valley School District. What do you think of what you've heard?
I think overall my biggest impression is that I become very concerned when education and working with children is boiled down to scores on paper. I understand that we need to have some way to hold schools accountable. We need to have some way to measure learning. But for me as a teacher in a classroom, teaching is so much more than about CSAP scores. And it's so much more about being present with children and knowing what's important to them in their lives that I become very concerned, especially when I hear the Pomona segment, that so much emphasis is being put on scores.
Well, you're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and we're in KCFR's performance studio with a wide range of guests, a teacher, principal, superintendents, policymakers, all discussing the CSAP, the Colorado Student Assessment Program. Some educators aren't happy with what they think is the test's one-size-fits-all approach. We caught up with Diana Howard. She's principal at Denver's Polaris at Ebert. That's a gifted and talented magnet program. Polaris consistently ranks among the top schools in Denver, and that's partly because of its high CSAP scores. Despite that, Howard says the test isn't quite right for her students.
Frankly, we have to tell the children before the major testing in March, do not be creative. Read very, very carefully. Write very, very simply, and stick to what is being asked. It's just kind of counterintuitive to what a gifted child would normally do. And a gifted child, a creative child, will tend to see one word in a prompt and create a world around that word, which may be the most wonderful writing you've ever seen, but it isn't exactly what the prompt asked. The readers probably lose it with our kids. If they are creative, they don't know where they went with that.
That's Diana Howard, principal at Denver's Polaris at Ebert. Jim Nairbauer is principal at Ferguson High School in Loveland. It's an alternative high school.
Obviously, in an at-risk alternative school, you're going to have a lot of kids that have a lot of other interferences in their life. The fact that they're a teen parent and the fact that in some cases they're thrown out of their house, they have to get a full-time job. And I'm not going to focus, add one more thing and say, now you got to do well on CSAP. We ask them to do well. We prepare them in saying the CSAP's coming up. We're not going to focus class time on it. Many of our students aren't geared for college. They're not going to be using Algebra 2 or, trig, higher level science when they leave here. They're going to be going into possibly, hopefully, front range classes that are going to be focused on their individual interest, what they want to do for a career.
Jim Nairbauer is principal at Loveland's Ferguson High School. Earlier we heard from Diana Howard from Denver's Polaris at Ebert. Both principals, by the way, came to us through our Public Insight Network, where listeners share what they know about the news. And we encourage you to join online at kcfr.org. Let's address this to the Commissioner of Education in the state, Dwight Jones. React to what you just heard, this notion that some educators feel the one-size-fits-all approach, that is, all kids take the same test, doesn't quite work. What do you think about that?
I think the majority of schools actually are doing a lot more than one-size-fits-all. If you think about the principal that spoke about the gifted and talented students, if we're actually making sure we're focusing on the standards, what we want kids to know and be able to do, it does not squelch creativity. Kids can be as creative as they like to. Matter of fact, if you even know how the writing pieces are scored, there are different points that are given, and some points are even given for creativity and for being able to write well. I have to share, I guess what gets the most reaction out of me is the principal that spoke to say, I've got at-risk kids, and those at-risk kids either aren't capable or aren't going to go to college, they're going to go a different track. And I have to tell you, I went to school in a high school that felt that way about me, and I think it was based on the color of my skin. And I just don't think educators get to make that decision. Even if kids come from very diverse backgrounds, that does not mean that they're not capable of learning. I think we have an obligation to make sure that all kids are college ready and then let them and their parents decide which track they want to go to. I have to say I find that very offensive personally, because I had the experience of a counselor coming into a college visit classroom and pulling me out saying, Jones, you're not going to college, you're going to Vo-Tech. And I've got nothing against vocational skills. But as my father shared with that counselor, that's not for him to decide.
Michael Bennett, superintendent of Denver Public Schools.
Just a couple of additional thoughts to what the commissioner said. First of all, it's important to remember that, again, when we're talking about the standard, if what we're doing is drilling and killing on test preparation, we're not going to meet the needs of kids, and we will fail. But we spend a lot of time in the Denver Public Schools with our principals and with our teachers around the whole notion of how you differentiate your instruction based on the individual needs of the kids in your classroom. The kids in Denver Public Schools come with a vast array of backgrounds, a vast array of talents, skills, and interests, and if we can't meet them as individuals, we're not doing our job. The second thing is that in the 2.5 years that I've had this job, I have yet to go to an elementary school where the kids in the elementary school don't think they're going to college and don't see it as an essential part of their future success. But we're 60% of the kids in the Denver Public Schools are not reading at grade level, and our kids don't have strong enough writing skills, and they don't have strong enough critical thinking skills or math skills. And in my view, that's not even about the Denver Public Schools. It's about us as a community and what we're going to do about it to improve the chances that those elementary school kids I talked about earlier will get a fair shot to go to college.
But what we heard from these two educators, one from an alternative high school and one from a gifted school, is that this test doesn't work for them. It doesn't work for their students. Kristen Waters, why don't you take that?
Again, it comes back to the standards. We have our state standards of what all students should know, and it's the test that measures whether or not they're meeting that standard. It's one test. But, you know, to hear that the one test stifles creativity, students need to be able to respond to a prompt. You know, they're not going to be able, when they fill out a job application, to get creative, and if they don't address the question, they won't get the job.
Elaine Grace, I'd like a teacher's perspective on this. Do you have the experience in your classroom of thinking, this is a great measurement for Sally, but it's not a great measurement for Johnny?
Yes, I would say so. I think there's a lot of students whose backgrounds are so diverse. Some students I may have in the classroom for 9 months and have followed the curriculum with me and test well, as opposed to other kids that have come in the door just 3 weeks before the test is given. One size does not fit all.
Angela Engel on this question.
It's interesting that everyone says, well, we've got to have an indicator, we've got to have an indicator. Well, you know what? We don't have to have just one indicator. We ought to have multiple indicators. I would much rather see 6 or 8 of my daughter's writing samples over the course of a year than get a CSAP test back that's been graded by someone who doesn't have any educational experience and has, in a 30-second period, marked off the 5 criteria they think my daughter has met. That, to me, is not an appropriate indicator of whether or not she can read or write.
Lori Shepherd, on this question, go ahead.
I think, in defense of those that are talking about an indicator, that this test should be just once a year. I don't want the state to administer 6 tests. I really want the principals and teachers to think of other assessments that on a more regular basis help us monitor student progress in the classroom where they can intervene in real time. This is a statistic like the gross national product. It isn't your financial portfolio and your retirement plan. It ought to be as rich a representation of that as possible, or we get the distortions that we talked about in the previous segment. But it can't be a across-the-board measure of every child's greatest strengths and greatest weaknesses. What you want to know is that when you get an indicator back from each student, that it's reasonably fair, that it's reasonably so-called reliable and valid, and that when we compare schools, those statistics are accurate in saying this school has made more progress, this school has not.
We spoke with the superintendent of Boulder Valley School District, Chris King, and he pointed out one question that was on the elementary writing test that he thought would make perfect sense to some kids, be confusing for others.
One of the prompts a year or two ago was to describe your favorite outfit. Well, boys don't generally think of their clothes as outfits. And so a young boy might really struggle to answer that question, where a young girl, it would, you know, she could go on for hours about describing her favorite outfit. Or in some cases, kids from different cultures might be thinking, what's an outfit, and do I have one, and do I have a favorite one, you know. But I also think it has cultural middle class overtones and things that maybe kids from poverty, for instance, it might not be as relevant a question as it is for affluent or middle-class kids.
Lori Shepherd, again, the dean of the CU College of Education.
I think that example is embarrassing to the test publisher, and that somehow got by them, ought not to have. They have fairly rigorous procedures, both statistical, and they have panels like with people here in this room who sit and read all those questions before they appear on the test, and they try to ensure that coming with particular experience would not make you more adept or less adept at answering.
Elaine Grace?
My thought that came to mind was just this last testing. The prompt was about volunteer work, and my freshmen were complaining that they felt that the prompt was too simplistic and didn't really give them a chance to think very creatively or to be innovative in their responses, and that it was just sort of a no-interest kind of a prompt.
Which actually is in direct contrast to what we heard from you, Commissioner Dwight Jones, Commissioner of Education in the state, is that we're hearing from both Elaine Grace and the teacher at the top of the segment that they do feel they, in some cases, have to tell their kids to dumb it down or to write a different kind of response to satisfy CSAP.
I'm not sure I heard Elaine say dumb it down. What I thought I heard her say was that some of the students were searching for experiences that they could write to. I don't know the students. I don't know what their situation is. But one thing that I think becomes clear, I think there will be some students or some teachers, no matter what the prompt is, that they'll have a feeling one way or another. And so, as Dr. Shepherd just shared, there's a lot of research. There's a lot of vetting these prompts against educators and getting feedback on which prompt to use. Now, sometimes I think they hit a home run. Sometimes I think it's a foul ball.
Well, in the next segment of the program, we're going to talk about what is riding on the test results. First, let's hear from a couple of Colorado high school students about their experience sitting down to take CSAP. These are two juniors from Pomona High School in Arvada.
One of the most important things that they stress is that pretty much don't bring anything into the room with you. So you just like strip yourself of like your phone, your keys, take your wallet out. They actually feed you breakfast, and it's like McDonald's, which is kind of gross in the morning. But, you know, if you're hungry, it's fine. I usually have like oranges because oranges are really good, and they seem to help me get awakened and stimulate my brain. And it takes a really long time for them to actually get the test started because they have to go over all, like, these rules and stuff. In between the tests, there's, like, a break, and so you can go visit with your friends or whatever. It's hard to, like, remember what actually happened during the test because it feels like it goes by. Like, once you're actually taking it and you finish it, you're like, oh, thank God that's over. Never going to think of that again.
I just do what I do every morning. I wake up really early. I don't know why. That's how I am. And then I just read a little, and then I eat breakfast. And then I studied a little, like, for the math, because I know I do bad on the math part. I was really stressed before, like, I went in the classroom, and then I sat down, and I saw the test. I'm like, okay, this isn't that bad. And then just took the test.
You heard there from David Miller and also Veronica Moffitt. They're both juniors at Arvada's Pomona High School. Today on Colorado Matters, we have 9 guests intimately involved in education, and we're talking about CSAP, the test, what's riding on it. Is too much at stake? In this next part of the program, it's a question we want to focus on. And Mike Campbell, I've got your school accountability report in front of me. And this is essentially a report card. Parents can look at this. They can use it to shop for schools. And it relies heavily on CSAP scores. It says that at Fort Lufton High School, the overall academic performance on state assessments, that is CSAP, is low. And if I see that, it might raise a flag or two for me. Is this an accurate portrayal of what is going on at the high school?
I would say that it's an accurate portrayal of the results from CSAP. It's not an accurate portrayal of the learning that's occurring at Fort Lupton High School.
Michael Bennett is superintendent of Denver Public Schools.
I would say that fundamentally, again, we have this instrument, but then the question becomes, what do we use the results for? And sometimes we've used the results to simply create labels for schools that may or may not tell you very much about what's going on in the school. In Denver, we've developed a new school performance framework that's much more heavily weighted toward the growth of our students, because what we're asking is, are our students growing during their time here? We know many of them are starting very far behind, others may be starting far ahead, and what we want to be able to see is their evolution as students across time, not just with the CSAP, but also with their ACT scores, their attendance rates, their graduation rates, and many other factors, re-enrollment, and all kinds of things, to give our parents a much more accurate picture about the direction they're headed. I'm really pleased that the commissioner has been pushing this as one of his interests in making sure that we're not asking and answering the irrelevant question of how did this year's fourth graders do compared to last year's fourth graders, not the same kids. The real question is, how did this year's kids as fifth graders do compared to how they did as fourth graders? And when I say how they did, not just on the CSAP, but on a number of other things, so that we can be able to begin to see whether kids are moving in the right direction or moving in the wrong direction.
And there is a similar effort going on statewide, something called the growth model. Dwight Jones, Commissioner of Education, if you'd respond to that.
The way forward is just what Superintendent Bennett described, and certainly makes a difference, I think, for Mike Campbell and his school. If we really look at the growth of student over time, we ought to start asking some different kinds of questions, like what should be appropriate growth, what can be appropriate growth, and how much growth is a student really making, or how much can we predict that a student can make. And if we start looking at it that way, it'll change this artificial number that exists right now for schools and districts across the state, meaning that if the goal is that all kids or 80% of a certain teacher's classroom is going to be proficient or advanced, that does not take into account where the students begin, where they started. And so if you actually will look at where a student starts, and then if we use the growth model that the Department of Education just rolled out, then essentially that looks at where a child started and how much growth did that teacher make with that student in that year's time.
So if someone comes to the fifth grade and is reading at a first grade level, and the teacher got that student to the fourth grade level, that should be honored, that there was that progress made. Laurie Shepherd, Dean of the CU College of Education, this notion that the data from standardized tests telling us not just a single number, but giving us a sense of progress, is that unheard of in standardized testing? Is that the sort of new model?
Well, there is a lot of interest nationally in growth models. Historically, there's always been a conflict and accountability test between status measures, what we've always used, which always privileges more affluent schools. So Boulder and Cherry Creek look great, always do, even if in some of those schools the kids aren't making as much progress as they could be. No one knows that. But then when people try to remedy that problem, they have historically suggested adjusting scores or taking account of socioeconomic factors, but we've resisted that appropriately because it sets lower standards for certain groups of kids. So what the growth modeling does is actually find a balance between those two things.
The federal government puts a lot of weight on what the CSAP scores are. That's the measurement that Colorado has chosen to associate with No Child Left Behind. Does the federal government, if I can put it this way, give you any props for the progress you've made, or just whether or not you've met a certain benchmark? John Covington, Superintendent of Pueblo City Schools.
Whether or not you've met the benchmark. As a result of No Child Left Behind, it looks at grade by grade and how far those grade levels have come relative to meeting those benchmarks from year to year so that we can be 100% proficient by 2014. And that's how the federal government looks at it and doesn't look at it student by student.
So, Commissioner, it sounds like the state is on board with this idea of progress, but if the feds aren't, and under No Child Left Behind, the fact that you can read the data that way is irrelevant. So what if Colorado's able to do this?
Sure. Currently, we have filed a petition with Secretary Spellings to move us towards being able to look at a growth model, if for nothing else, to at least allow districts to have safe harbor, where they can actually use growth to determine, are we making sufficient progress? We believe we will get approval from Secretary Spellings and from the U.S. Department of Education to use that model. They've put a hold on it. I recently received a letter from the Secretary saying that until they get NCLB reauthorized, that they are not going to approve any additional growth models. And so the state of Colorado is in a hold as it relates to NCLB. That does not mean that we don't have to hold how we currently look at students over time. So it is our expectation in August, when the current CSAP assessments that are going on right now, when we get those results back the end of July, that by early August we'll be able to roll out the growth model to every school district in this state.
This is Angela Engel. I want to know, whether it's longitudinal data or some other kind of data, how is that serving our children?
Well, that data improves what happens to the child in school a great deal because of the information that we gather from that data. It allows the teacher to be able to chart progress of that kid and to be able to make instructional decisions in real time, and that has got to happen in every classroom in this state.
Mike Campbell, again, principal at Fort Lupton High School. What do you think of all this? What do you think of the growth model?
I would find it very, very exciting. The scores that you read at the beginning of this segment about our report card did not have any indication that the 63 ninth graders in 2006 that were more than two grade levels below in reading, when they took the test as 10th graders, that number went down to 28. We got no credit for moving a population of kids more than two grade levels in reading because they still scored unsatisfactory.
That doesn't show up on the school accountability report
that
I read.
What you read at the beginning of this segment does not reflect that kind of growth. So what the commissioner is talking about is honoring the hard work of the teachers in my building that made a difference in the lives of those kids by moving them two grade levels in 9 months.
That's Mike Campbell, principal of Fort Lupton High School. He's one of nine guests we've assembled in our performance studio. And our Colorado Matters CSAP special continues after a short break. We'll be looking at the future of the test. I'm Ryan Warner, KCFR News.
KCFR's Public Insight Network helped inform today's CSAP special from Colorado Matters. It's a group of people who tell us what they know about the news. Members of the network shared their experiences with education and their concerns. We'd like you to share what you know, and not just about education. Sign up at kcfr.org. Tell us a little about yourself, your areas of expertise, your hobbies, and what stories you think we should be telling. Become a part of the Public Insight Network at kcfr.org.
It's Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. A special hour-long version of the program today, we're talking with a range of guests about CSAP, the Colorado Student Assessment Program. It's the high-stakes test students around the state have been taking this month. So far, we've talked about preparing kids for CSAP, whether it's the right test for all students, and what's riding on the results. In this final segment, we ask, what's the future of CSAP? We'll start with the Commissioner of Education, Dwight Jones. He says, before you can talk about the future of the test, you have to talk about the future of the standards, that is, what Colorado expects kids to learn.
I think there's going to be many things that we'll need to look at in relationship to the CSAP assessment. But I think we ought to be real careful to say assessment should not drive our instruction. It ought to be the other way around. So to start with the assessment, I personally believe would be a mistake. In the Department of Education, we've started with what we think is the right piece, a standard review. What do we want our kids to know and be able to do? And then you ought to align the assessment to what Coloradans say that is.
So the issue in your mind is, look at the standards. Let that dictate what the assessment looks like. And briefly, we say the word standards. We throw that around. What does that mean?
When I say a standards review, here's the process that we are putting forward, that we do think we've got to take a look at 21st century standards. I do think we have to look at college readiness. We have never really focused K-12 standards on really trying to prepare all kids for that way forward. I like to say something post-secondary. It doesn't just have to be college, but we want to make sure that all kids have the opportunity to go to college if they choose. And then I do think the business community has asked for a long time workforce skills. Where are they within the standards? What does that look like? And we know from some of our business are even talking about those soft skills, showing up on time, making sure you can fill out an application correctly. How do you conduct an interview? I mean, it's all of those pieces.
Is it safe to say with this kind of conversation, Commissioner Jones, that CSAP as we know it today, the test that kids are taking this month, is not around for long, that change is coming?
I'm still confident that some form, we're going to have some form of an accountability system, whether we call it CSAP or whether we call it Jump to the Moon, is still going to be an accountability system that's got to be in place in relationship to first what the feds require, but that isn't even the conversation we ought to have. What do we require? What are we holding ourselves accountable to? What do we owe the parents of this state to assure them that their kids are actually progressing at a level that prepares them for a future?
Mike Campbell, the principal at Fort Lupton High School, when you hear about the future of the test really being a question of the future of the standards and what are we teaching our kids in this state and what do we need to be teaching them, is that something you meet with exuberance that this might be coming down the pike or trepidation?
Both. But I have 15-year-olds that are going to live the majority of their life in a century that I don't have any idea what it looks like. The internet is relatively a handful years old. There is nothing in the standards that references the internet.
The contract, Colorado's contract with McGraw-Hill, which is the company that that designed CSAP, is up in 2011. And so there will be some question at that point. And before then, what will a future test look like? What should a future test do? Lori Shepherd, is someone who has studied high-stakes testing, can you have a test that reflects jobs that don't exist yet and technology that we're just getting our hands around? What would that test look like?
I commend the commissioner that the first question is what should the standards be like and what combination of academic and workforce skills should be represented in a common test. So some students who are going to college and some students are going into the workforce will have to have very specialized skills, but what should they all be able to do? And that's very likely going to include some things about their ability to write. How much of geometry does everybody need to know? How much of data analysis and probability does everybody need to know, regardless of their paths after high school? The most important thing is that the way the test gets made to represent those standards be a full embodiment, not a cheap correlate of what it is you want the students to know. But when they do the tasks on the assessment, they're really demonstrating the kinds of abilities that you want them to have. So it'll look like workplace use of the internet, for example, or it'll look like applied mathematics problems, etc. So it's sensible to the students when they're doing it so that it meets the standards in a full way so that, as we've talked about before, you don't have teaching the test where you learn some very narrow procedure for the test and then you can't use it in real life.
Angela Engel, you are a critic of CSAP, and as you hear this future-focused discussion, does it give you any comfort about what tomorrow holds?
No, and I'll tell you why. Now that we're having conversations about, well, how are we going to improve the test and how are we going to improve the standards, to me is a misdiagnosis of the problem. I would much prefer that we be having conversations about how to improve learning for children.
But if you improve standards, doesn't that mean improving learning for children?
I don't need a standard to tell my daughter to think. She came into the world learning and thinking. What she's going to need to be able to do is solve problems, be able to collaborate, be a communicator. Those things are better addressed in the classroom with teachers that know her and spend time with her on a day-to-day basis.
But shouldn't there be a level at which all students are a base level to say, you must know this, you must be able to do this.
We're all different. Are we going to round up all the 36-year-olds and say, you've got to have this same exact skill set, this exact same knowledge set? We don't. We're specialized. We're specialized in our understanding. Should all children learn to read, learn to write? Yes, but do they need the legislature or the Colorado Department of Education to tell them how to do that, to write the protocols or the pamphlets? That's what teachers are in the business of doing, teaching.
John Covington, Superintendent of Pueblo City Schools.
With regard to what should be the responsibility of the teacher, I think it's clear that it is the state's responsibility and the boards of education within the various states' responsibility to say what shall be taught. And then it's the teacher's responsibility and right to say how that shall be taught.
Elaine Grace, as a teacher at Monarch High School in Boulder, what do you think of this as you hear about a redevelopment of standards and how that might influence the test you administer in a future classroom?
Well, it sounds like steps in the right direction. It's a huge task, I think, as people have acknowledged. How do we set standards for going into an age that we can't really even predict in so many ways? As a little bit of a tangent on this, I guess I would add, too, I would hope that one thing that we do keep in mind, too, is that there's some relevancy for students in whatever kind of test that we come up with, that the test has meaning for them. Because my experience has been, even now, even though I am from a school district that does traditionally very well in CSAP, that overall, students, especially at the high school level, I think, don't give CSAP a lot of credibility. They don't really care about the test. They don't care how they do. It doesn't have any significance for them, for their future, because there's so many other things that matter to them. So I would hope that any changes that we do, that we incorporate that in the test.
Well, thanks to all of you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
That wraps up our Colorado Matters CSAP special. If you missed any of the discussion or want to learn more about the test, visit our website, kcfr.org. There you can read about our guests, see sample test questions, and view a school accountability report. We'd also love your feedback. Sign up for our Public Insight Network, where people share what they know about the news. Christina Tabor produced our show today. Kelly Griffin is executive producer, and Bruce Kennedy is managing editor. We had assistance from Zach Barr and audio engineers Martin Skavish and David Fender. I'm Ryan Warner, KCFR News.